It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, up front, I want to tell you, due to certain pieces of content that are likely to appear in this episode, my mother is highly likely to listen/watch. So I know how you normally like to just say terrible things about my mother all the time for a goof. I never really got it, but you know, you do you. But this time I would like to specifically request, stop harassing my mother this time, because she's going to be listening.
I'm not going to dignify that with a response.
I need a verbal agreement from you, or I can't possibly do a show.
Nope.
All
see
right.
You later.
Sorry, Mom. He's going to say terrible things.
She knows I never say terrible things about her.
No. There is one listener's mom that he mostly talks shit about, and I won't tell you which one. It's you. If you're still listening right now, it's your mom specifically. No, but given that, and given all the things we have to discuss, including the thing you text me about that I apologize for not getting back to you on, but we definitely got to talk about that. I want to front load it with the reason my mom is listening, and then if she wants, she can stop. Although, as your mom, you're welcome to be here for the whole episode, of course, like everybody. But if you were just here for this little bit of info, then you don't got to spend too long. So, and this is also a very big one, but I have hair in my ear, so I'm going to fix that. All right. And this is one William already knows about. So, on this podcast, I think both of us, to a large degree, like to be very open and honest with everybody about what's going on in our lives and talk about it. William can be a very private person, but it's not in his nature to be dishonest, certainly, and obfuscating certain, being circumspect can make that a thing. And it's not in my nature to shut up about anything. It does happen on occasion. Commonly, I think, if it's something that doesn't sound like it would be interesting, but also sometimes there are things that I feel like I might have an earlier step before just putting it on the internet. You know, like telling close loved ones and family about a thing before just putting it on there. So I have been keeping something back for a while, and it was also very who knows for a long time, and then it wasn't, and William and I have talked about it off the air, but I needed to talk to my family about it, and so now I'm here. So let's talk about it.
Okay.
I am currently enrolled in the, I guess you'd say, the bariatric surgery program at University of Iowa Healthcare, or hospitals and clinics, or whatever it is, in their digestive health clinic. This is the program wherein either they do a traditional gastric bypass, where they take your esophagus and hook it to your small intestine and just skip the stomach, while making a little pouch at the bottom of your esophagus that can still hold food, but no digestive enzymes. Or the newer sleeve procedure, wherein they just take out 80% of your stomach and throw it away. Before anybody freaks out.
Thanks for clarifying that. I was wondering if they would, you'd use it for any purpose.
Yeah. Well, they specified in the video, they were like, we are taking this out it is going in medical waste. You cannot get it back. Like, this has come up. Okay. But also, before anybody gets particularly worried about any of this, I'm not fucking having the surgery. I'm just not. I mean, I'm trying to keep an open mind, and maybe something surprises me at some point. But now that I know everything I know, oh, hell no. I mean, it's just like, well, and there's a lot of factors there. You actually, they have a, the clinic has a full-time psychologist, and you have to meet with them for 2 damn hours, which I will be doing in a few weeks, to see if you are a good sort of psychological profile for it. Not only do I not want to do the surgery, I think I'm a bad psychological profile for it.
Mm-hmm.
What is currently happening is I am meeting monthly with a dietitian from that clinic, and I am on a fairly specific and strict diet. I'm trying to see if I can get you. Because this is UIHC, we're not computerized here. We just got a piece of paper. So I fill out half of this every, it's mirrored, I suppose. Half of this every day. And I need to be getting, the goal is 30 minutes of exercise a day. I have actually bumped that up considerably. And I will be meeting monthly until I stop, which there's a lot of things that can make you stop. I mean, you can also just choose not to be there. But from what I have gleaned, my insurance needs me to show up at least 3 times before they'll even think about paying for the surgery. Obviously, if I pay for the surgery, those appointments stop, but then other appointments show up because the surgery has a real long lead in and then a real long recovery. And also, if you go a year without doing the surgery, they say you gotta leave. And I assume if the psychologist is like, yeah, this is bad for you. Like, I don't know if that triggers me. I kind of hope not, because my current plan is just gonna cruise doing this program for a few months until I meet with my primary physician again. Because I met with him by coincidence at the end of the week I had scheduled for my first meeting. And so I kind of just want to see how things go. So I'm hoping that's what'll happen, but we will see. This has, I think a lot of people, for people who don't know this, I've been 400 pounds pretty consistently. Like, it's been a pretty stable weight for lots of years. Probably like a decade, maybe not quite that long, but, and I mean, I haven't seen 300 since maybe high school. I don't even know. So I'm a big boy. And I work at dealing with it. I always have. I haven't really stopped, and it's ups and downs. I get real serious, and things happen. Like, I get diabetes. And weirdly, what shocked me into doing something about it wasn't the threat of diabetes. I knew it was coming. It just came. And then I was shocked into doing better. And I did for a while, and then I didn't. And sometimes it relates to food. Sometimes it relates to exercise. Sometimes it's a combination. And I get better. And then I kind of slack. Then I get worse. And it's never too terrifying. It was bad enough eventually that we had to add in a new medication. But it's a great medication. I love it. It's called Victoza. Highly recommend it. But it occurred to me recently that I have been really actively working on this for 25 years or so. And it has its ups and downs. But even at my best, I'm never in like the ideal, like where we want to be. It's always like, you're making great progress. Oh, now you're not. Like, I'm never near the goal. And in theory, even if I'm trending in the right direction, that shit's still damaging my body. So I'm like, I've always said that the bariatric surgery was an absolute last resort because I hated it on a variety of levels. I hated what it represented socially and politically and just philosophically. And of course, personally, I had a lot of issues with it. Terrible idea. But I was like, you've tried for decades to do this right and not done it. So maybe you got to pull out the nuclear option.
Hmm.
And my doctor also came around over time. He originally was like, you interested in this? And I was like, I am never interested in this. Like, that's cool. I'm not too big on it either. And then over the course of like 15 years, he's now like, oh, maybe you should check it out. So I was like, okay, I'll actually, he said that I think in April. And I was like, okay, I will seriously think about it. And Trish looked into it some and all this, and there's a lot of good stuff about it. And mostly that it increases life expectancy. Even if you regain all your weight, generally speaking, life expectancy goes up. And I was like, okay, we'll do this. So, giant hospital, huge bureaucracy. He puts in a recommendation, and I wait for a few months. And then they get back to me, and I fill out a big questionnaire online. And then I wait. And then they call me. And they schedule the first thing. Well, what they do first is they send me a bunch of stuff in the mail and they send me a link to a video. And I have to watch this video that explains a lot of what's going to happen. And I watch this video and I'm like, fuck. Because there are a lot of side effects after the surgery. There are potential side effects that are not great. Your hair might fall out after the surgery. You might become lactose intolerant if you weren't before. You could get something if you eat too much sugar afterwards called dump syndrome that I won't explain, but it has symptoms that you would expect from something called dump syndrome. It's not nice. Also, there's a lot of things you then have to worry about because of several factors. One is you don't have nearly as much digestive enzymes anymore. The place where you put the food is way smaller, and it's in your interest to keep it smaller. And because it's smaller and because of the first two things, you absorb a lot less of the nutrients that your body, that you're eating. So you have to eat very nutrient dense things. You have to take an unbelievable number of vitamins that have to be spaced out throughout the day. You can't have full stop a lot of things that aren't nutrition based. It's because of the surgery we did based, no alcohol, which whatever. The big ones for me is no carbonation, because it'll stretch out your stomach again. And you need to be really careful with acids, especially acidic drinks, which includes things like tannic acid and citric acid. So flavored water things, you know, like the ones I use to get my caffeine out. Tea and coffee, you can have up to 8 ounces a day of one of those. So I basically would be giving up caffeine as well. And here's the real fun part. So those are all the side effects, and they're around for the rest of your life, no matter what, because we cut out chunks of your stomach and or skipped it
and threw it away.
But if you don't keep to your diet, your exercise, and do continue to do all of the things, your stomach can totally grow back to the same size it was. It can stretch back out, and so you'll be just where you were, but with all these side effects. And I've been I immediately was like, this is awful. And I kind of sent myself into a panic spiral until I finally was like, you don't have to do the surgery. And then that helped. And since then I've been like, yeah, fuck that. But I've also been trying to ponder, because this is a thing people do. Lots of people do. And the worst I usually hear is, yeah, I did it. It was great. Then it all came back, which is not great. But I also hear people that it's a huge thing. And I'm like, who does this? Because it really seems pegged at, you're going to change your lifestyle, so it's really going to be one of those food as fuel things. And I'm like, people I know who aren't that into food are already skinny. So who are the people, like you or one of the listeners who I'm friends with, I think would have no problem with this. You could adjust quite quickly. I'm not saying you would enjoy it, but I think you could adjust quite quickly. Because of how you live your life, which already is why you don't need to have this. And in my head, it was always like, when my willpower fails and I've decided it's not going to work, this is a thing that like doesn't give me the option. But it super does. Because after the surgery, if I don't keep up on everything, which is all up to me, I don't die. I just get it all back and plus a bunch of shitty side effects. And so eventually I'm like, this was supposed to be my last resort. So do I just die early now? And I was like, no, you can come up with something. And what I finally realized like yesterday is I think I might know who this is for now.
Hmm.
So a lot of it, I think, is tied to the exercise, because exercise makes a huge difference. The time at which my numbers were at their best, I was exercising very regularly. And I don't even think I was worrying too much about what I was eating, but I was exercising enough that it was largely maintaining my blood sugar and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And because, okay, let's break it down. Here's that the program a whole as a great, I am learning a lot of lifestyle things that are going to be very important for me going forward. But the surgery itself, as near as I can tell, has one purpose. It makes you lose a bunch of weight over the course of roughly a year to 18 months. Not permanently. It just makes you lose it. And I'm like, so do people really, what's the difference? And then I realized there are a lot of people for whom excess weight is such a thing that they basically can't exercise very easily or do the basic things that they need to do to like really exercise. And that's not me. I may be lazy. I may be fat, but I can do a good workout. I mean, I have to be willing to do it, but physically I am capable of it
right
now.
Sure.
So I don't want to do this. But in the meantime, I'm learning a lot of things and it's being very good. I started, today is my 9th day on the diet. And I have stuck to it quite well. I have cheated a couple times in very sort of small ways. And it never had to do with hunger. It's always about like, it's almost bedtime and I'm suddenly like craving some carbs or something like that. So I had like, that's. Or like we had rice-a-roni with dinner with the neighbors and I made a ton of it because there's 6 of us and hardly anybody ate it. And so I ate my allotted portion. And then later that night, I was like, fuck it. And had myself a bowl of rice-a-roni because rice-a-roni is awesome. But like I haven't been hungry and by and large, I've been sticking to it. It's very fun. So most of my life, I don't like diets in general, but most of the time I have been in that situation, it has been focused on carbs, which is a good way to go. We have been lied to for decades over sugar and other things like that, and also the role of fat in our diets. There are various types of diets, some of which are very different from each other, that can all have good effects, but watching your carbs is a critical one. It's part of why keto is so big and Atkins was so big, and it's also very key to being diabetic. You got to watch those carbs. This is not that diet. This is a good old-fashioned balanced diet. Mm. This is, everything is broken down into carbs, fats, proteins, and non-starchy vegetables, sort of get their own category. And I get X, they call them bubble sheets because they're little, there's little bubbles on it. I get so many bubbles of each of those things per meal. It's not the same per meal. Like there's no vegetables in my breakfast, but like, you know, like for example, I get 2 carbs, 4 lean proteins, and 4 fats. And then various foods are either one of these, or in some cases they double up, like an egg, 1 protein, 1 fat. What this has created for me is I have to be much more restrictive about what I eat, and I am eating a lot less, which is still, I'm really impressed at how much I'm not hungry for that, because I'm eating a lot less. Although it's also spaced out. You have 3 meals and you have 3 snacks, and you have to get those in, and that's the thing. But it's reintroducing things to me that I had kind of pushed to the side because they were kind of carby. And like, I'm not saying I wouldn't ever eat them, but I would only eat them when I was being bad, as it were. But now, like, okay, try this on. Have you ever had cereal? Cereal's fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this because I have a lot of experience in my life with cannabis products. And I'll tell you, nothing's better when you're high than cereal. But in general, cereal kicks ass. I've always loved cereal, all kinds of cereal. Cereal's great.
Yep.
I can have cereal now.
Good.
This morning's breakfast, a cup of Honey Nut Cheerios. I also have Special K with red berries, and I'm going to switch it up next time I go shopping. Come on, Honey Nut Cheerios. 2 eggs scrambled, and 1 ounce of this deli meat pineapple smoked ham that's really good that I chopped up and I put in there also. And then because the ham was a lean protein, I have 1 fat left. So rather than just having to do a little thing of cooking spray, I actually got to cook these scrambled eggs with butter. And that was my breakfast. And that's a lot of breakfast. And it's tasty.
That is a very good breakfast.
That's
like what they show in the cereal commercials.
Right, right.
Breakfast.
and so I am doing a lot of that. Also, one that just popped into my head yesterday. And so I did it today for lunch as part of my lunch, not all of my lunch. You know what I had? You're going to like this one.
What'd you have?
Peanut butter and jelly sandwich. The bread was 2 carbs. Peanut butter is a little fucked up. It is 1 protein and 2 fats. And the jelly is a carb. But this was a tablespoon of peanut butter and a tablespoon of jelly, which is plenty for a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
It is.
And I still had a bunch. I actually ended up having some sliced chicken by itself because the end of the thing, I'm like, I don't have a lot of fat left, but I have a lot of protein I need. So I did that. But it's tasty. And a bunch of vegetables. I mean, a lot more vegetables and a fair bit of fruits. It's not required, but I kind of try and get them in. And also, this is the time of year for it. So, and you have 3 snacks a day. And specifically this clinic, they are milk snacks, which is to say they are whey-based protein snacks. Although they have suggestions of if you're lactose intolerant or if you're, but like you can do alternate milks and things. And there's a few different options. String cheese, 1/2 cup of non-fat cottage cheese. That's a fun thing to discover. I love cottage cheese, and I have learned non-fat cottage cheese is of the devil. It's really real, real gross. Low-fat cottage cheese, great. Non-fat cottage cheese, gross. But it does mix well in scrambled eggs, so I've been doing that occasionally. But the big one is a non-fat Greek yogurt with X amount of protein and below Y amount of calories. I don't remember. All I remember is they had suggestions. One of the big ones is Dan and Light and Fit Greek yogurts. I now eat 3 of those a day. I go to the store and I buy 21 of them. It's kind of crazy, but I love them. And they got a bunch of different flavors. And so let me tell you, that helps the day. three times a day outside of my meals. I eat one of those. That makes a big difference too. So that's been pretty awesome. I have allowed myself two pops the whole time.
Mm.
I had one. There was one day that I looked at the information and I figured out I could eat KFC for lunch. And I did. And I probably won't do that very often because I was allowed to do it. But as it worked out, it was way less filling because I couldn't eat much of it. And so yeah, that day was a little off. And just kind of a pain trying to juggle all the different information there. But that came with a drink, so I just had it. And then today, because I've been kicking ass, I rewarded myself on the way back from an errand I have to do. I went into the Come and Go and I bought a Diet Mountain Dew or a Zero Sugar Mountain Dew. And I'm not too worried. I'm trying not to do it. And I'm trying to ease up on the other stuff too. But most of that is about, again, post-surgery stuff, which I don't intend to do. So I'm not super worried about that. I am trying to drink more plain water, which means... Some of you won't remember this. Most of you maybe, because we didn't used to videotape that, but William should remember this. The extreme gulp is back.
Yep.
1.5 liters of very well insulated space that I only use for water.
Longtime listeners might have remembered hearing the ice, you know, yes, when you were using it. You could hear it on the podcast. Yeah.
I don't know that you can hear right now, but yes. So I brought that back out. That's a big thing now. It is funny because there is a, you're not supposed to drink any fluids while you're eating.
Hmm.
And in fact, because post-surgery, it's actually 30 minutes before you eat and 30 minutes after you eat, not at all. Dave said, for now, just work on not drinking while you're eating. But also, you have to drink a lot of water. You have to drink 8 cups of plain water a day. Sorry, I said that wrong. You have to drink 8 cups of plain water today. So you have to drink an incredibly small amount of water. For a lot of people, this is tough. I have friends. They're like, I'm not sure I drink that much. I fucking drink. That's 2 quarts of water. I might drink that before I wake up in the morning. I'm not sure. I definitely drink that much before I eat breakfast.
Oh,
I drink many times that amount throughout the day. That's insane. Huh. That's nothing. Nothing for me. So that part's easy. And then we come to the exercise, which I started later. I started it this Monday. So today was my third day of doing it. I know that math doesn't work, but that's a different story I have to tell. But I have now done it 3 times. And what I did, because I no longer can go to the fitness center at Trisha's work, they had to move it and they're putting it in place where it's not secure in a way that they can let non-employees go there. So that's out. And I didn't want to go back to my gym because I didn't really like my gym. But I needed a thing that would give me a treadmill and some weight machines and a patch of ground where I can do my core stuff and my PT and all that. So after a little research into it, I have joined Planet Fitness.
Hmm.
And Planet Fitness pricing is way more weird than it was when it opened.
Is that near you? That is there?
It's Fitness in Sycamore room? Mall. It's in the back of Sycamore Mall.
Right.
So it's quite close. But it used to be like $10 a month. Great. That was their whole gimmick. You can still do that, but now there's a lot of caveats and you have to sign up for like a year at a time and all that. And I was like, I don't want to do that. And meanwhile, their super fancy version, their black, they call it Black Card, which I'm like, you're Planet Fitness. Calm down. You're not American Express or Carvel ice cream cakes. It's basically 25 bucks a month. And it gets you all the bells and whistles. Like, all, you know, they have all the optional tanning booths and massage chairs. And you can do that. I can bring a guest anytime I want. And I can use any Planet Fitness in the world, which just means here, but still there's a bunch of them throughout the US and some in Canada. And I don't have a contract. I can stop whatever. And that is for those of you who don't belong to gyms and things, that is still considerably cheaper than any gym in town.
Hmm.
And any gym in town is going to be way more contract based and weird stuff. So pleased about that. So now I go and there's a fair number of people there, but it's really big. So we're not really near each other. And it has all the stuff I need. So I go and I do 30 minutes of treadmill at 2.5 miles per hour. Traditionally, when I would work out regularly, it was 20 minutes. I decided to up it to 30 minutes. That's been a bit of a trip. And then I spend about 10 minutes doing the floor work, doing all the PT things, all the things, make sure my back don't hurt, all that kind of stuff. All the stuff to work on my core. And then I do weightlifting every day.
Hmm.
What I have settled on is I do 3 weightlifting exercises every day. And I alternate, one day is upper body, one day is lower body. And I'm just going to alternate forever. But crucially, if I didn't mention before, this is going to be 7 days a week.
Wow.
I'm not ever not going to go.
Huh.
There will probably be exceptions for holidays and stuff, but they're open 5 a.m. Monday to 9 p.m. Friday. They're open the whole time.
Hmm.
And on Saturday and Sunday, they're open 7 to 7. And it's always staffed when it's open. So this is what I think it's going to help. First of all, they want you to do exercise every day, but also I think this will help me reinforce the habit. And like, it's too easy to like finish and take a weekend off and just like enjoy not having to go. And so then Monday I'm like, oh, you know, I'm feeling a little weak, or I don't know if I get, you know, that kind of bullshit. So I'm like, no, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to do it every day. Now on the weekends, obviously it's not going to be the first thing when I wake up in the morning. I think it's probably on Saturdays, it's going to be after we go to the farmer's market, come home, then I'll go. And on Sundays, it'll probably be after I come back from grocery shopping, but it'll work out. And I got my podcast, I got my audiobooks, so that works all good. I'm pretty pleased so far. So we will see how that goes.
Sounds like a good plan.
It's so, as we all know, let's basically call it what it is. I'm retired. Neither me nor my spouse intend for me to ever get a job again. So I'm retired. And I have things I got to do. I definitely got things I got to do. I've got medical appointments, my therapist, this podcast, social engagements, and chores. I got lots of chores and things and other stuff going on. But my schedule's really flexible. Like, I have remarkably few things that I have to do at specific times. And I'm really trying to get into harnessing that. And like, back in the day, I have to wake up earlier now because I do need to get done before it's time to take Trish to work. But back in the day, I couldn't have done what I'm doing now and still gotten ready for work myself. And on the weekend, I would have been so glad for the weekend that I'm like, oh, I'm not going to waste time doing this or whatever. But like, I have, and the diet is fine, but it is a little more involvement to make my meals, at least sometimes.
Yeah,
I'm eating a lot of eggs and you got to cook those, but I have the time and it works. And the flexibility and the time I have is a huge privilege and a huge gift. And I should fucking start using it, you know? So that's what I'm doing. And I'm digging it so far. What is surprising is you would probably not be surprised to learn that sweets and desserts come at a high cost on this diet. What's surprising me is I haven't had any. And it hasn't been... I haven't been jonesing for them or nothing. And I like sweets. I haven't sworn off desserts. I'll tell you that. But like, and I guess I don't eat desserts a lot on a regular basis, but like, doesn't even pop into my head. It's weird. I'm pretty psyched about that. So.
Good.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the probably about half over episode of the Magical Talking Cat podcast, the only podcast in the world that, like, it was a joke. guys, like, we were just fucking around. It wasn't a and now it's been like 12 years and we can't stop. But like, don't read it. It was a joke. We were just kidding around. Like, and here we are. I don't know. Like, it's just, maybe there was a bet. One of us might owe the other a dollar. I don't know. But this isn't, it was never meant to be. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And for something that was never meant to be, amazingly, we are at episode 595. And showing no signs at all of stopping.
No, I don't think we can. No. It's a compulsion at this point. It is the largest addiction I have. And I have a lot of addictions. This is the worst one. I'm addicted to podcasting with this freak. Specifically. I wish I knew how to quit you.
It seems like that one's been in your holster for a while.
Oh, bullshit. I think I've used it two or three times before on this podcast.
Maybe you have.
I just forgot. Out. I think somebody needs to hunt those down, because I think your reactions have changed over the years when I use that.
Oh, maybe.
Mom, if you want to stop listening, we probably won't talk about the diet anymore. But you're welcome to stay. For those of you just joining us for the first time, what is it? We have a hat. It's magical. It emails us, and you email it, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Email it. Put a lot of email in there so that it can send it to us. It can be whatever you want. Comments, questions, topics, diatribes, outlines for new hit series on Peacock. Whatever you would like. And then the hat magically on its own transmogrifies those emails to us, by which I mean forwards them to us, and then we read them. Given how much shit we have to talk about today, I'm not even sure we're going to get to one today, but we will see. How has your week been? I know you have at least one piece of news.
I do.
Yeah.
What is it?
I'll give you a hint. I never realized what a hardcore gamer your wife was.
I mean, I can think of a few things I could talk about, but I don't know how interesting any of it is. And also, it might just come up, you know.
Well, yeah, there's some things I know you need to talk about that I also need to talk about. We'll get to that.
I just will mention that, yes, we did get a PS5. And it's pretty awesome. So you've been noticing the hardcore gamer part. Are you referring to her playing? She's been playing Astro's Playroom, is what she's been playing a lot of. But she did start.
I'm just referring to having a PlayStation 5. Oh. So few people have it now. So I'm like, you only have a PlayStation 5 if you're hardcore.
Well, I mean, she of course was stubbornly committed to the idea of not paying twice the, you know, original price to someone who's hoarding them or whatever. And so for the last couple of years that they've been available in one form or another, she wasn't going to overpay for them. So recently, I guess, the PlayStation and Amazon and maybe a few other places have figured out a way to make it so that, you know, for a long time, what they were doing was they would send you a message about the machines being available, but they were just going to be on their site available first come first serve, and you just had to get there, and if you didn't press buy or shopping cart quick enough, someone could have snatched it right from underneath you. But now they've got a different thing, well, where they will email you specifically, and you do have a limited amount of time to answer, but as long as you answer in that period of time, no one's gonna take it from you while you're
waiting list, basically,
kind of. And so, yeah, I mean, if you don't answer in, I don't know, 5 days or whatever, then you're out of luck. But as long as you go within that time period, nobody's going to, you know, snatch it from underneath you while you're purchasing it. It will be there definitely for you to purchase at the original price that these were offered. She did, her price was a little bit higher because she got a machine that had, that came with Forbidden West.
Horizon Forbidden
yeah,
West.
Yeah, as part of the deal. So it was just a little more expensive, but only the, it was just the price of the game really is what it was. So yeah, and she was able to get it. She was really surprised. My brother, like 11 days before, got his in a similar thing, except he did his through directly through PlayStation and Abby did hers through Amazon. But it worked out.
There could be a lot of people who didn't tell me, but I know of, besides your wife, one, maybe two people who actually have.
Yeah, so I don't know why they didn't do this a long time ago. It seems like they could have just done this and prevented all of this problem, because it's caused a problem for PlayStation because, I mean, even though these people who are hoarding these machines have made money off of it, very few people have them, which means the people who are making games for them aren't making money, which means that's bad for basically everybody. So you'd think they would
and
have
there's
come
a,
up with
there's solution. A reputational issue.
Sure. And you'd think
because
this would
it's become a joke that PlayStation 5's kind of don't exist. And if they do, they cost $8 million because of all of this stuff.
And think about this. By the time a critical mass of people will have them, like maybe now after they've adopted this new strategy, a lot of people will have them. The machine will already be 2 years old, which, you know, when the PS2 and the PS3 were 2 years old, everyone was talking about, well, what's the next thing going to be? And so people are just getting the PS5 at a time where usually they'd be wondering, well, what's the next thing going to be?
It has paid off super well for me, though. Because almost no game is coming out just for the PS5. It's also coming out for the PS4. And so I have yet to be lost in the shuffle. I assumed I wasn't going to be able to play Horizon Forbidden West until I got a new machine.
But see, that's not what PlayStation wanted to happen. And so now that big marketing push that they could get from new games, everybody wants to play the new game. Well, that's gone. So now what's going to happen? You know, you're usually a late adopter. Now would be about the time where you'd be thinking, well, maybe I should get one, but you can wait another 2 years probably.
Yep.
So yeah, that did not work out. That did not work out for
great
PlayStation.
For me.
Yeah.
Not so good for Sony.
But I mean, we
like she hasn't played Horizon Forbidden West yet.
Yeah, she has a little bit.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit.
Well, because she wants to play it at times where she can play it. You know, she doesn't want to just go in there and play for 30 minutes or whatever, whereas she can jump on and play. You know, Astro's Playroom is free with all PS5s. She just jump on and play that for 15 minutes and quit and be fine. But you know, if she's going to play Forbidden West, she wants it to be for like a, you know, 3 or 4 hour stint or whatever.
PlayStation Plus's monthly free games include, it's now three games, and one of them is always a PlayStation 5 one. And I make sure I get it. I put it in my library. So when I do get a PS5, I'm already going to have several games.
Yeah, some free games. Yeah.
So I'm pleased with that.
But anyway, I took more time to do that than I wanted because I know you've got a lot to talk about. And I want you to talk about it.
I have also been playing a new game.
Oh, have you?
I thought I would wait longer to get this game, but the internet was so obsessed and wouldn't stop talking about it, and I eventually discovered there could be spoilers for it, and I was like, screw it, and I did it. And I spent $30, because it only cost $30, on the game Stray. For a lot of people.
Oh, with the cat, right?
The game where you play as a kitty cat.
Yeah.
Yes. The post-apocalyptic looking game where you literally play as an actual non-anthropomorphized cat in a broken down city populated by robots who act like humans.
We have to get that just because there's robots.
Everybody has to get it, of course. And I was like, I got to get it now because there's a story to it. And it's really, and it's Annapurna, who I love as a publisher. They make great story heavy simple games and all that, and I watched some reviews, and then some of them were like gonna have spoilers, and some of them said things before they weren't about spoilers that I still kind of think are spoilers, whatever. So I got it and I started playing, and I played it for probably 5 hours, which is probably more than half the game. It's a very short game.
Oh, okay.
Short answer is great. Get it. It's wonderful. Longer answer, I like it. I don't love it.
Hmm.
And the primary reasons, I think there's two reasons. One is I think it's just hype. Like, everybody loves this game so much before I got my hands on it that it just couldn't be as awesome as everybody said it was.
Right. Right.
But another factor is I find it not hard, but more difficult than I want for the vibe of this game.
Mm.
Like, a lot of it's just hanging around solving little puzzles, using cat things and stuff like that, and finding stuff. But some of the things to find are surprisingly hard to find. I've had to look up several of them because I'm like, I don't want to take the time to do this. And there are, I guess, for lack of a better term, action sequences where there are things that can hurt you. And I died and had to redo those often. They're not very long, but I found them hard enough. And again, a couple of them, I'm like, I don't even know how I get through this. I had to look up, like, how do you get through this section? I don't know if those will continue because I'm in a totally different section of the game. But it's kind of hard. But I mean, I'm definitely going to finish, and I definitely like it, and I definitely recommend it. Yeah, you play as a cat, and after a little bit, you get a little robot buddy, like a little floating, flying one, and he lives in a little backpack on you. Which is really cute, because when you first get the backpack on, your cat does the thing cats do, like when you put something on them, and it's walking around like low to the ground as though it could get it off. And there's plenty of just random cat shit, where not cat shit, cat shit, where like at certain spots you can sharpen your claws on like the edge of a couch, or like there's places where you'll find puddles and you can drink out of them. There's places where you can curl up and have a little nap and things like that. But there is a little ludonarrative dissonance in that you are just a cat, but people talk to you and send you on missions and things like that. It's a little bit mediated by the fact that nobody knows what a fucking cat is.
Mm.
Like, the robots are just like, you're a very small thing. That's weird. I've never seen one of you, and you're kind of tiny, but whatever. And your robot is translating for you. Like, anytime I go talk to one of the regular robots, my little dude comes out, and he says what they're saying.
Hmm.
But it's pretty cool, and it looks really good, and the feel of it is good. The music's good. The story's very interesting. A lot of it is helping the little robot find things that will trigger memories, because it doesn't really remember what it was doing and all that. And it's only $30, so I do recommend it. But yeah, I've been doing that. Before we go on to our important topics, I have another surprise for you.
A surprise for me?
I think even for you. I don't think you know about this one. I can't remember. I don't think I told you. So, remember, it's Thursday, and I said I exercised 3 times.
Yeah.
I was not able to exercise on Tuesday. I actually had planned to do it, but I was too anxious, and I decided not to. Because I had to go to jury duty.
You did?
I did.
Did you get selected?
No. But I got real, real, real close. Real close.
Did you dress as Princess Leia and say you couldn't be a juror because you can read people's minds?
No, but I fucking wore my purple caftan.
Oh, you did? Okay. Did that help or hurt you?
Dared. I don't think it did anything, because it's fucking Iowa City. Mm. But part of it was the thing, like, maybe I'll get out of it dressed in this. But also, they kept in the instructions and stuff, they kept talking about dress there is no set dress code, but dress appropriately. And they like dress as you would to go to work, or go to school or church, they specified, or shopping or whatever. I'm like, this is what I fucking wear when I go out. So this is what I'm fucking wearing. But so jury duty. We all know it. What good is it? Jurors, they're just like us. No. Here's what I have learned for people. Of the people in the world I have known, there are mostly two kinds of people.
Okay.
People who know how to read binary. No. People who just have straight up never been had a jury summons at all.
At all. Wow.
At all. Quite a lot of those, actually.
I wish that was me.
And ones who got the summons and had to make the phone call the night before, but got told you don't gotta come.
That's never happened to me. I always have to at least go in federal court. I had to go once for federal court. I had to go to Davenport.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have had very limited experience for the first 4 years after I became a registered voter and adult. I got called up two or three times, but I got summoned to court in Oregon where I was registered to vote, and I was in school in Iowa, and it never happened in the summer. So every time the summons would get to my parents, not me, and they would call them and say, yeah, he halfway across the country and not coming back soon. And they'd be like, okay. And then I eventually switched over to Iowa, and I think I've been called once before, and I had to call, and they're like, you only got to show up if your juror number is this, and mine wasn't, so I didn't have to show up. This time, I got a thing in the mail that said, listen, fucko, we sent you a thing in the mail, and you didn't do nothing, jerk, so do it now.
I think that's happened to me once too.
I didn't see this, but whatever. They were nice about it. And so now it's online thing. So now I go with my credentials from this thing to this online thing and I fill out this big old questionnaire. And then they're like, cool. And then very few days later, I get emails and texts saying, okay, so tomorrow's your day. You got to call in tonight and see what's going on. And I called in and they're like, jurors 1 through 80, you got to come to the courthouse. And I'm jury 57. So I'm like, well, shit, I got to go to the courthouse.
County courthouse.
Which I never been to. I mean, I know where it is. It's in Iowa City. I've driven near it, but I've never been to it. Huh. And
I've been there lots of times for lots of reasons.
Well, yeah, you have a checkered past. I never got caught, so I never had to go there. No, and I was gonna say maybe for marriage license, but no, it was there things that other people might have to go to the courthouse for. In Johnson County, you go to the county administration building, and I've been there many times.
Sure, no,
but not the courthouse.
Yeah,
but so I go in and I go to the courthouse. I go up to the third, that building is old, and I get to the top, and here's what happens for those who don't have the experience. So I get it. They send you into the courtroom and you sit there. And I counted. There were way less than 80 people in that room. I'm going to guess it was like 40.
Okay.
And you sit there for a little bit. And then eventually they make sure everybody came who they were expecting. And then they make you watch a 20-minute orientation video, narrated entirely by a retired justice of the Iowa Supreme Court and a sitting justice, a chief justice of the appeals court. This video is not interesting. It is somewhat informative, somewhat. Way less so if you watched it before, like they told you to, and gave you a YouTube link for it, which I watched the night before. Same fucking video. I was annoyed. It's also annoyed because when I watched it at home, it drove Trish out of the room. She's like, I can't take your propaganda video. She didn't get that far because they spent a lot of time in the beginning thanking you for your service. It was weird. But so I'm going into this with, I'm trying to be good. I don't want to do jury, but I also don't want to manipulate the system to get out of it. I want to be honest.
Sure.
And I'm also aware that as somebody without a job, it's way less inconvenient for me than it is for other people. And that's fair. So I'm being good. Also got my mask on. Not everybody had their masks. I had mine though, so nobody can see my face anyway. And I brought a book, which was good. But so yeah, you do that, and then you get to go take a break for about 15 minutes. And then you go back in. And then the judge comes in a brown robe, which I found weird. But the judge comes in, and then lawyers come in. Two of them. On West, I think the case might still be going, so I don't want to speak too much to it, but it was a criminal case. I could have been there for criminal or civil. And so the two prosecuting attorneys come in and a defense attorney comes in. And then here's the weird bit. The defendant comes in and sits with the defense attorney for the whole time. Does not appear to be consulted during this hours-long process, certainly does not say anything, just has to sit there silently watching the jury be selected. That feels real weird to me. I understand you get to face a jury of your peers, but why do you got to be there for this weird part? Because this is the shit that's not in the Law and Order episodes. Hours of time where jack shit happens, but everyone's present. And so, like, okay, we're doing this. All right. So, like, okay, we're going to call 25 people. And we're going to pick from that. Now, some of them are going to get kicked out. And that the rest of you have to stay here because you're going to
be. You might be alternates.
Yeah, we'll sneak in if we kick one out. Like, okay, I'm sitting there. I'm like, the odds are probably in my favor of not getting picked. I don't know for sure. Anyway, they called 25. I'm not picked. It's great. And they're going along, and they have, we had to fill out the questionnaire so they know things there, but they also have set questions. Any of you got a medical appointment, you can't move. Any of you got a vacation plan over the next two or three, they specified it will take, the trial will take 2 or 3 days. And as soon as they specified that, I'm like, oh, I don't know, like this even more. I don't want to do this. I was like, this could fuck up the podcast. We might not have a podcast if this happens. We'll see. And other thing, you know, other reasons why you legitimately couldn't be there other than jobs. Everybody's like, I got to go to work. It's like, fucking everybody has to go to work. That's, and they cannot fire you for this. So chill out. But they do all this and a couple of people have to leave. And so every time somebody leaves, they call another name. Third or fourth time, they call me. So I get up there and I sit down in juror number four's chair. I'm sitting there, and then the attorneys get in on the action, and the attorneys start asking people things, and they asked specific people, and they said, we're not going to ask everybody because it's kind of crazy, but things they have read already, they're like, okay, you said this on your thing, is that going to be a problem? Like, is this a thing? And frequently, if it was a more general thing, they're like, does anybody else have trouble with that? No, it's fine. I did like one. There was one guy who, like, because everybody was surprisingly upfront and honest. Like, there were a lot of things where they'd, like, say something. Like somebody was like, have you or somebody close to you been a victim of a violent crime? And this person's like, yeah. And they're like, what happened? And she's like, well, it's two of them. One, a friend of mine was murdered. And another is, I was a victim and I'd rather not talk about it unless it's necessary. And they're like, okay. And then they say, do you think that's going to get in the way? Do you think you can still be like impartial towards a criminal defendant and things like that? And she's like, yeah, I think so. And most of the people, if they had a thing that probably could have got them out, they're like, yeah, no, I think I'll be okay. I was proud of people for that. But then there's this one guy that's like, he works in a correctional institute in the county, which I can see as a conflict. But the judge is like, okay, do you think that you could still be impartial and all this? And he just went, nope. I was like, I mean, I guess that's fair. But anyway, so they asked all the things, and both lawyers, both sets of lawyers passed everybody who was left with cause, which is a thing. So the 25 of us that are there now are good. Now everybody has to leave the room because the lawyers and the judge are going to do some haggling, I guess. I don't know. Weirdly, the people who weren't in the 25 still had to stay, but whatever. So we go out for a while. Everybody's outside the courtroom, which is awkward because there's not a lot of space out there. But eventually they let us back in, and I sit back down in chair number 4. And they say, all right. And then we get about a half hour of this. The prosecuting attorney has stapled two or three stapled sheets together that I presume has our names on it. And she makes some notes and crosses something out, writes something, and then she hands it to the court attendant, which is what you have instead of a bailiff now. And the attendant walks it 3 steps over to the defense attorney, who looks at it, consults his notes, scratches things, changes, and gives it to the attendant, who walks it 3 steps back to the prosecuting attorney. Repeat for like a half hour in silence. Incredibly boring. Person that was most bored, the judge. Because the judge is not involved in this process, and the judge didn't bring a book or his phone. So the rest of us are just like, but he's just sitting there counting dots on the ceiling, or I don't know what. So I felt bad for him. But then they finish that, and they go up to the judge, and they're all whispering, probably about me. I don't know. And then he's like, everybody in these chairs, get up. Go over there. I'm going to call 13 names. That's the jury. So we're heading out. As we stand up and we're shuffling out, the judge says, actually, Mr. So-and-so, you can probably just stay right there because you're on this. And it's the guy who was in number one seat. It's like, also, Miss such and such, you can stay there. It's the number two. And Miss such, who's the number three. He stopped then. Thank goodness. I was getting real nervous. But I get out, and I've been working this through in my head. This will be fine, whatever. It wasn't until he's calling that name, those names, and I feel my heart rate just shoot up, that I was like, I really don't want to be on this jury. I really don't want to. I was kind of freaking. And then they didn't call my name. And they said, there's your jury. The rest of you can go. And I left. But it was shocking, and it was interesting, but it was more tedious and annoying than it was interesting.
You got one step farther than me. I've been called about 4 or 5 times, once to federal court, and where I usually don't get past the, like you said, they'll have 40 people, but they're only going to draw names, 25, you know, and everyone has to stay for alternates. I've only one time been in that group of people that's actually sitting in the jury box where they're going to ask them questions to see if they're going to stay. And that one time it was, the case was about underage drinking. And, you know, they found out that I didn't drink, asked me if that would be an issue. I said, no, I don't think so, but it didn't matter because they didn't want me anyway. So, but I didn't even make it to that part that you're talking about where they were passing the paper back and forth. Yeah. I was dismissed.
Well, you missed out because it's a thrill a minute. And again, the fucking defendant just has to sit there.
I do remember that.
All of this.
Yeah, I remember the defendant being there.
Different states, different counties have certain different rules because there are certain things that the law doesn't require. It's just how they do it. So this isn't necessarily how it would always look for everybody. But I was really surprised about that part. Also, and again, I don't want to say too much, the defendant was Black. And I did, as I was sitting there, seriously consider claiming I might have trouble with my impartiality because of my strong belief in institutionalized racism within the current legal American legal structure. And I was like, that's true, but also you're just trying to come up with an excuse to get out of this. And in fact, I think you're probably in better shape for being impartial for holding those beliefs. So I didn't say it, but I had the urge. Yeah, so that was interesting. But yeah, so I didn't go Tuesday. And also my diet was a little screwed up that morning because I was like, I don't know when I'm getting back. So I had kind of a big breakfast and then just skipped another thing. You know, the funny thing with this diet, sometimes I forget to eat my milk snacks. The most common is the second one of the day. So like right after we're done recording, I should probably have another one. And sometimes if I'm doing stuff, I just forget. That's weird. Me forgetting to eat food. Anyway. I do have a little one I want to get to before we get to the big one. Trish and I have now watched the entirety of Peacemaker on HBO Max. Peacemaker, the John Cena-led spinoff series from the movie The Suicide Squad.
Right.
I'm guessing you have not seen it.
I mean, I think we tried to watch one episode or something, but I mean, I wasn't a fan of that Suicide Squad movie or his character. I thought maybe they'll go an interesting direction with it. And it did. The first episode was a little interesting, but we decided, nah, it's not for us. So we didn't.
They do actually go in a fairly interesting direction with it. Okay. But I think the first an episode, not even an episode, maybe half an episode, is a pretty good gauge for it. And also if you didn't like the Suicide Squad movie, we did. Then yeah, it's probably not a good sign. But Trish really liked it, the show, and she's not even entirely sure why. I enjoyed it, not spectacularly so, but I did enjoy it. Everybody says like, oh, this is some weird fucked up humor. Not everybody's going to take to this. Be prepared. So I was prepared. And then that first episode was so completely not what I was expecting that I was essentially in shock. Like I couldn't come up with an opinion about the first episode. Cause I'm like, I was just so prepared for something different. And the best way I can put it is I was expecting fucked up. It's James Gunn. It's Suicide Squad. That character already is real fucked. I mean, this is a character who said, I'll do anything for peace, no matter how many men, women, and children I have to torture to get it. So it's already fucked up. I was expecting more dark and less whimsical, for lack of a better term. It's way goofier than I expected. Like I expected things like the John Cena character to have a pet bald eagle. I even expected things like the John Cena character claiming that the bald eagle hugged him one time. I did not expect the bald eagle to actually hug him. And that's in the show. I mean, it's CGI, yeah, obviously. But like, I was like, okay, so we're being silly here. Because in this, a bald eagle hugged a man. I mean, not just any man, John Cena, but still. So that was weird. But yeah, it had some real good performances in it. I really do like it ended its storyline and like satisfyingly while still having a whole bunch of stuff there to do a second season very easily, but no like cliffhangers or unresolved bullshit. And I want more shows to do that. It has a pretty cool soundtrack if you're into like 70s and 80s metal. It has a real good soundtrack. It also, the opening to the show is every character in the show. Okay, I should rephrase. Every actor who is in more than one episode of the show doing a very elaborate choreographed sort of line dance thing to a heavy metal song that I want to say they made up for the show, but I don't know for sure, called Do You Really Want to Taste It? And it's a weird song. It's a lovely choreography. I get real into it. The song is the biggest fucking earworm since somebody that I used to know. We finished this show like 4 or 5 days ago. I only just yesterday stopped having it go through my head constantly. So fair warning to that, but it is a hell of an impressive deal. So that's fun. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, The Suicide Squad is also on HBO Max. I would say watch that first. If you like that, try out Peacemaker. It'd be weird enough to. And we have a personal stake in it. One of the main actors in it is an actor named Steve Agee, who we have known for many, many years. He's a comedic actor, and it's just good to see him get regular work. I like him, but nobody ever really hires him for the long term. So that's nice. All right, let's get to the important bit. Sandman. We've been watching Sandman. I know you've been watching Sandman. Let's talk about Sandman.
Okay.
I know how you guys operate. You already watched the whole thing?
Yeah, we did.
All right.
Seems like there's something going on inside.
Rumble? Two gangs having a rumble?
I don't know. I think someone called a little bit earlier and left a message. I wonder if they were outside.
That there was going to be a rumble?
It doesn't matter. I'm doing this. I don't know what they're doing out there. I'll find out, I guess.
Ice Cream Man.
No, he's already been through. He came through while we were podcasting also. Yeah, we did.
You
we
totally have can. I will vamp while you run out and get ice cream from the Ice Cream Man. That's fine with me.
Like,
that
now.
Seems fair. But, well, for future reference.
We did watch the whole thing, yeah.
We have only seen 4 episodes. The last one we saw was the introduction of Lucifer, if that gives you perspective.
Yeah, that is the 4th episode.
Yeah, I know. That's why I said it.
So, do you have any... I mean, what are your impressions?
I mean, I have lots. Let me give you the short one up front.
Okay.
I like it a lot. I highly recommend it to almost anyone. It has horror elements in it, as the source material did. If you don't like that kind of stuff, you probably shouldn't watch it. But otherwise, I think I recommend it to anyone. I will also say, and Sandman comics are a very personal experience for a lot of people, so I can only speak from my perspective, but I think this is the best adaptation to TV or movie of the Sandman comics that would be possible. I'm not going to say it's perfect. It's definitely not. I think it's one of those things that's kind of unfilmable, like Watchmen. But I think this is the best job you could have done with it. And I really like it. That's my short take on it. I have way more to say. That's my short take. What about y'all?
Yeah, we loved it. The reason I know that that's episode 4 was because I took note of it, because I thought that episode was so good.
Well, you also might know, because I'm pretty sure it's fucking issue 4. Every episode appears to be an issue of the 10 issue volume 1 of Sandman, Preludes and Nocturnes. It's literally the whole first story arc, and they're doing it. I mean, I haven't watched it all yet, but so far it matches up pretty exactly.
Yeah, I really, we really, really liked it. I was kind of surprised to find out there was really anybody who didn't. I mean, I presumed maybe.
Are there people who didn't? I haven't heard any feedback.
Yes. I mean, right now the Rotten Tomatoes scores are like 86% for critics and 86% for audience. And I would just, I know, but I would expect both to be higher than that. And I've heard like there are people, I think AV Club didn't like it. I think, you know, I don't know what it is. I mean, again, there's always comic purists. They're like, well, they should have done it this way or that way or whatever.
They change. They're changing. What I find interesting so far is it's a weird, the changes are accelerating from zero. I'll explain. First episode, virtually nothing has changed other than they've updated everything. The original comics take place in the 80s. They are setting this so that the present day is the present day, essentially. So you have to update some things for that. But the first episode changed almost nothing. That is pretty much line for line the fucking first issue of Sandman. The second episode, they start changing some things. Just a little bit. The third episode, they've changed a little more. By the fourth, they've changed a few things. And some things are, I understand, because of time limits and stuff and the difference of comics and TV. And some things are because it's better for TV this way than that way. And then there are some casting choices that I'm all in favor of. We've done some gender switches and some colorblind casting that I'm very big fan of. But they are slowly changing it in ways that don't really surprise me, because there's some shit in Sandman that would not fly today. And even Gaiman himself has said, like, there are things I would change from the original. And in particular, there is a bad guy character that they seem to be making much more nuanced, much more sympathetic, much more intricate. Like, they're definitely creating the character in a different vibe than the original story to me. But I think they're holding to the spirit of it. The visuals are on point. Everybody's doing a great job. A lot of the casting choices are absolutely inspired. As did I mention on here before that Gwendolyn Christie is the third best person in the world to play Lucifer?
Third best, huh?
Yes.
Who are the first two?
Well, Bowie's dead, so he couldn't have done it. But I think he actually was the visual inspiration in the original Sandman.
Yeah.
And I'm going to assume either Tilda Swinton was busy or since she got to play an angel in the Constantine movie, she's not allowed to do it again. I don't know. But after those two, the third person is Gwendolyn Christie, and she nailed it. I was very much not happy with her hair and costume. But I think the problem is Lucifer comes back in later arcs. And the initial Lucifer, I think, was a little different than what comes out later. And I think I still think in those terms. So I think that may be part of the problem. It was funny, though, because she towers over everyone in her stuff. And Trish was like, what did they do for that? And she looked it up. She's like, oh, no, Gwendolyn Christie's actually 6'3".
Yeah.
So she towers over everybody because she just fucking towers over everybody.
I think does that make her taller than both of us? Or is she about your height?
She's taller than me. Yeah. She's about my dad's height. A little shorter than my brother. I will say, I'll talk to you off the air about it. Because I've decided, I haven't mentioned this to Trish either, there is a specific thing about one of the main characters, a tick, an affectation, as it will, that annoys the shit out of me. But I'm not mentioning it to anyone because I feel like it's one of those things that, like, once you see it, you can't unsee it. And so I don't want to ruin the experience for anyone else by pointing it out. But you're done, so I will tell you afterwards.
Okay.
And I don't know that anybody else has that problem. But yeah, they've done some gender swapping. Lucian is now Lucienne. The Constantine one was interesting. We don't have John Constantine. We have Joanna Constantine. And I don't know if that was an aesthetic decision or if that was because John Constantine already exists in a televised version and we wanted to keep it separate. I thought Jenna Coleman plays John Constantine or Joanna Constantine, which I would never have expected. I don't know that I think she does a good Constantine. She's very good in this role. And if I came into it not having previous experience with that character, I wouldn't say this. I have no complaints, but it doesn't feel like how I think of Constantine. So that was a little disappointing. But
I thought they missed an opportunity with Death and how she was dressed.
Well, we haven't had Death yet. I haven't got that far. Death doesn't show up until the end, except maybe through flashbacks. But we haven't seen Death yet.
Well, it's not going to be the last episode, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they may do flashbacks and stuff. But yeah, I think in the comics, she doesn't actually show up until the last issue. But
I'd be interested to know your opinion because I didn't have a problem with who they cast at all. But I thought if you're going to make certain changes, why don't you change these things also? they changed some things and stopped at the changes. And I thought you could have changed a little more things and made it kind of interesting.
I don't know. Gaiman was very heavily involved, as was David, what's his name?
Boyer.
Who also was involved in it. Yeah. So.
And the other guy was the guy who worked on the Wonder Woman movie. What was his name? Anyway.
Patty Jenkins?
No. The fella. The guy that worked on the screenplay for.
Oh, I don't remember.
I forget his name, but he's been involved with it too.
I don't know if you noticed. So the character of Rosemary, who gives John Dee a ride, that's the psychologist from season 2 of Ted Lasso, Sarah Niles.
Yeah, I had to point that out to Abby because she's so different, and I was really impressed.
Well, no, I recognized her face immediately.
Yeah.
And so I knew it was her. But then as she went on, I was like, is she not British? Because she's killing it with this American voice. So right. I'm like, one of these two is not. So I looked her up right then, and she is actually British. So this one was the fake one. But she nails both.
Oh, yeah.
She nails the accent beautifully. They did. A lot of the stuff around John Dee is going differently, and I don't hate that because that was some of the hardest stuff to revisit when I was rereading the comics. But yeah, it's very interesting so far. And yeah, we're digging it. The only reason we're not further along is Trish was really into Peacekeeper. So when we had a chance, we would mostly watch that, but I imagine we will get through it quite quickly. Yeah, I think that's it. I have a lot of stuff to talk about. I apologize for dominating time here, but yeah, Sandman is on Netflix, and as we all know, almost all of us still have a Netflix subscription, even though it is simultaneously the most expensive and worst of the streaming services, and this is why, for things like this. So go watch it, everybody. If you've got thoughts on Sandman or Peacemaker or Suicide Squad or bariatric surgery or Planet Fitness or Stray or PlayStation 5, I don't know how that works, or anything else, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Tell us your thoughts. We will probably respond to you. We've been known to do that. Also write in things. We always need more stuff. I know it doesn't look like it this time, because we're going for like an hour and a half with no questions. But I had an interesting week, people. Doesn't always happen. Sometimes I have a really boring week and need your questions. I would say the boring weeks are more common. So write in with your things. Anything you want. Go nuts. TheMagicalTalkingCat@gmail.com. And in the meantime, go to aethertheater.com. consume Williams stuff, go to smashwords.com and look for a book called Odd Wings, all one word, O-D-D-W-I-N-G-S. I wrote it, and you can get it. It's not free anymore, but it is only $3. I mean, that's mostly it, right? Yeah. Smash that like button.
Smash it.
Be sure to leave a comment below and subscribe and I don't know.
All the stuff.
Yeah, you know, the things the kids are saying. Oh, we're not done.
Why not?
Because I forgot something else.
What's that?
Saw a movie last night.
What'd you see?
Good Luck to You, Leo Grand.
I've never heard of that one.
It's very new. It's on Hulu. You might be more familiar if I tell you it's the movie where Emma Thompson hires a male prostitute.
No.
Oh, wow. All right. You missed out. It's a fairly recent movie. Emma Thompson plays a widowed school teacher who basically decides she's going to hire a young man as an escort because basically she's only ever been with one guy and she basically hasn't experienced sex in any pleasurable way, and she decides she wants to. Of course, we open on her freaking out and thinking maybe it's a bad idea and all this stuff. The movie is very much a play. There's maybe three characters in it, and one is not around for very long, and it's near the end. There's basically two characters in it, and it all takes place in one hotel room and then one hotel coffee shop. The gentleman opposite her is a young gentleman I had not heard of before. I cannot remember his name, unfortunately. Trish had a lot of conflicted feelings about it. Some of them personal, some of them not. Here's what I'm going to say. I don't know how to start this. It's a very specific movie. It's a movie that discusses a lot of things involving sex work and people's views on sex in a very specific way that ignores or just mentions in passing a lot of aspects of both of those things aren't covered at all. And that's it. It is a film of privilege in a lot of ways. It doesn't address a lot of issues tied to that. And that's a thing that I'm going to acknowledge. It is very specific for what it is. But I really like the story it's telling. And it has a very good take on sex in general and sex work and the nature of a relationship with a sex worker and what that means. It is not, I expected it to be somewhat trite because it sort of comes off, it's billed sort of as a comedy drama. And it is, it's got a lot of funny stuff in it, but it is quite serious. I can think of some criticisms against it, but in general, I liked it and found it very interesting and found the chemistry between the two actors marvelous. So in general, I would say I recommend it, but be prepared. It is limited in what it is. It's a good movie. And it's also, I mean, I'm not going to say it doesn't have any nudity in it or simulated sex. It definitely does. It's not a particularly explicit movie, and it's not, I don't think it would be uncomfortable for you, William, to watch. It's not that sort of movie.
Okay.
It's not, I don't think it's particularly salacious or gratuitous at all.
I don't know if I call it uncomfortable so much as annoying. I don't think I've ever outgrown that 6-year-old, oh my gosh, are they doing this again? When is this going to be over? I mean, I say that stuff all the time. It doesn't have to be graphic either. I'm just like, oh geez, why do we have to do this now? I just hate it.
All right.
And if it's explicit, that is a little worse because I don't want to see that either. But I mostly don't like mushy stuff in anything.
I don't think I knew this at all.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Abby has to deal with this all the time. I mean, just with people kissing or whatever, it's like, oh, here we go.
Well, I don't think this movie is particularly mushy, so you may okay.
Well, that's good.
It's I would not call it a romance.
Oddly, when we watched Carnival, you know, they would have nudity and things like that, but it was always in a very different context. So it's like, I mean, I still didn't, you know, like it, but I didn't bother me. It's like, this is part of the story. It makes sense. All the other times I see romance in something, it just seems so extraneous. And it's like, you know, this part, they put this part in this story, not for me. They put it in for somebody else.
So me.
I'm not interested.
Although that being said, I do get really annoyed nowadays at romances in films where I'm like, that's not how relationships work.
Well, I mean, yeah.
But I'll tell you what will mitigate that and make me not really complain about it. If there's a bunch of sex and nudity, see, so it's a little different for me.
No.
Anyway, I think I would in general recommend it to most people. It's not very long. It's like 1 hour 36 or something. It's called Good Luck to You, Leo Grand, and it's on Hulu. And I liked it. Trish, a little weirder. It is interesting because I would say the two characters are a couple generations apart. And the woman who wrote the screenplay, and I looked it up, it doesn't appear to be based on a stage play, for all that it's super a stage play. The woman who wrote it, Katie Brand, she's a British writer and comedian who's been around forever, is pretty much solidly in the generation in between the two. So she doesn't actually know what it's like to be of either, which is interesting. So yeah, I'm going to throw that out there. All right, I'm going to skip all the other crap, do all the things I talked about earlier, and we will see you next week, unless we're hiding.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.